I think I'm entitled.
You want answers.
I want the truth.
You can't handle the truth.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
I think that we're very clear we can't have a ceasefire. If we have a ceasefire, it means that it's a surrender to Hamas, it's a surrender to terrorism, it's a victory for the axis of terror. That doesn't mean that we can't give, you know, in a specific time, in a specific place, for a safe corridor for Palestinian civilians to leave the zone of fighting. Yeah, we do give them the ability to do that. But I don't think anyone argues for a general ceasefire. That's not going to happen. By the way, the only time we'll have a ceasefire is for the return of our hostages. Without that, it's not going to happen. And then we'll continue until the battle is won.
The words of Benjamin Netanyahu last night on Sean Hannity, saying we're not going to have a ceasefire, not even a pause in fighting, unless we're getting hostages in return. There have been talks underway that it would happen. Now word coming late last night that the Israeli government has signed a deal that will see the Palestinian Hamas terrorist group release at least 50 female child and elderly hostages over the next 4 days for a pause in the fighting and the bombing of Gaza. Apparently, one of the first to be released will be a 3-year-old. I don't know if they hold an American passport, dual passport or not, but letting a child of 3 years old out. But here's something you need to keep in mind. These 50 are going to be released over a period of days. They could be released all within a day, half a day, at the most 2 days. Why 4 days? Maybe 5? Because it gives Hamas more time to relocate munitions, command centers, and get more munitions available. Israel knows that. Hamas knows it. But Israel is in a position where to quiet the world who thinks they're trying to kill everybody in Palestine, which they're not, that would have already happened if that were the intent. They would have leveled Gaza, the entire strip of 26-plus miles, 2 days after October 7, if that's what they wanted. Not caring if individual citizens, innocents, are killed. But they try to be very precise with target appointments and bombings, going after command centers, leaders, munitions, but they're often buried underground, under hospitals, under homes, under a mosque, under a school, or even stored in a school right in the midst of the civilian population, so they're going to be civilian casualties. So the world has been, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, you're killing innocent people. Yeah, they are. That's not the intent. And if Hamas would just let all of them go and leave the war zone, then that wouldn't happen. But Palestinians who are trying to escape the war zone are being shot in the back by Hamas terrorists. And that will also then be blamed upon Israeli bombings. Now, in return for the 5 they're going to be releasing, I mean the 50 they're going to be releasing, Israel has said it will release a number of convicted Palestinians, none convicted of murder. And as soon as the hostages are delivered, the 4-day period is over, back to the war again. Here we are, November 21, 2023, November 21, 2023. Second hour of Larry Connors USA. We're here every day for you from 6 to 8 p.m., Monday through Friday. And while we're on the air, we're also streaming video for you at Larry Connors USA Facebook and Twitter, News Talk STL Facebook and Twitter, and on Rumble. I encourage you to simply push the button to subscribe. Costs you nothing. We send it right to you, and then you can listen to it as you choose. You don't have to go search for it. It's just there automatically. And let me remind some of you that you're listening to one of two FM signals we have, 101.9 FM and 94.1. You know, we've got an app for that. It's simple. You just open up NewsTalkSTL.com and push it and press listen. It immediately open up the app. It's on your phone, so wherever you are, you can be listening to this program or others. And if you're in your car, just like you're talking to someone on the phone through your Bluetooth, you do the same thing. Link it up through Bluetooth. So this hostage exchange is apparently, as I said, already signed off by Israel. That was also written up in the Israeli Times in a briefing. Also, a report, an Israeli negotiator today said that the Hamas leader had already decided to die as a martyr when he launched the October 7 attack. Did not mean, however, he would not use negotiations to achieve other goals in the interim. So some 12 to 13 hostages will be released per day as the ceasefire is underway. All the concern about the hospital, Al-Shifa Hospital, and all the tunnels under it, the command center. Netanyahu had made several efforts to help the patients, to get them out of the harm's way. Once his troops got around the hospital and went in and cleared it of terrorists, they knew that below the hospital were still tunnels and weapons. They were taking folks out of there. They were wanting to set up temporary hospitals. And in some cases, they were able to take them into Egypt. Some newborns that needed special treatment are now in Egypt. Egypt took the newborns. And he's also asked France to provide a medical ship off the coast of Mediterranean, where maybe off the coast of Gaza, actually, where they could take some additional hospital patients. That's all been done. So they're taking every possibility to lessen collateral damage. And, of course, offering humanitarian aid routes in that would not be shelled or bombed. But he said the problem exists continually, and the trouble is Hamas.
We have a humanitarian safe zone in the southern part of the Gaza Strip. We're putting in trucks, humanitarian, drugs. Medicine, rather, food, water, that's what's required under humanitarian international law. We're doing all that. And guess who's interfering with that? Guess who's firing on the Palestinians who want to leave the safe zone? Hamas. So the fact that people are condemning Israel is absurd. You know, I'll give you the example. The best example I can give you is the Nazis attack the West. You know, they conquer Europe, they conquer Poland, they invade France and so on. And America and its allies organize themselves to counterattack. They invade Normandy. They go through the cities of France. They go through the cities of Germany until they reach Berlin and reach the victory. And in the process, the German army is fighting them within cities. They're fighting them within civilian communities. So what do the Allies do? Do they say, well, we can't do anything? Of course not. They try to minimize civilian casualties, although many, many, many Germans were killed, as you know. And they do the job. That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to minimize civilian casualties, but under no circumstances should we be blamed any more than the Allies should be blamed. And those people who demonstrate against Israel are basically lining up with the forces of darkness.
They are the forces of darkness because they don't care if the civilians are killed. They'll just blame it on Israel. And it makes good propaganda footage. Thinking a picture of a dead baby is good for them. That's how abhorrently evil these people are, the Hamas terrorists. There are innocent Palestinians in Gaza, but they've been caught under the control of Hamas for the last dozen years. They had nothing to do except do what they're told. It is probably unknown how many Palestinian civilians were killed by Hamas, killed by Hamas before October 7 because they weren't doing as they were told by Hamas. I want you to hear a college student in Michigan. And he begins by describing kind of what he is, and then the reporter is going to ask him another question, which turns the entire conversation.
I'm Muslim. I'm American. I'm Palestinian. Ghazal calls anti-Semitism horrible and disgusting.
Do you feel the flip side of it? Or is, are there
in
more
terms of Islamophobia?
Yeah, more Islamophobia. Of course, people just saying hurtful things.
I think it's disgusting that standing up for children dying and women dying and civilian infrastructure being destroyed is being compared to supporting Hamas. I mean, holding up a Palestinian flag does not support Hamas. Hamas has their own flag. Nobody's carrying their flag.
He is absolutely uninformed if he's looked at any of the rallies. The rally outside President Biden's home in Delaware, the rally in D.C. the other day by the pro-PLO group, the PLO groups rallying on campus, they're all carrying PLO flags, and many are carrying Hamas flags or signs that read, from the river to the sea, which is the same thing as pro-Hamas. And, of course, he made a point, since he was asked about, are you feeling the reverse way as being Muslim? Are you being a targeted? Yes, I am. I told you in the last hour, I don't have time to go through it in detail again, but many young women, young Western women, are because of October 7 and seeing the shelling of Lebanon and the hospital and all the sad stories you're getting delivered by Hamas, deciding to become Muslim, buying books of the Quran, wearing hijabs, saying they want to join the movement. But they do not understand, once you go into that movement, you're not a woman anymore. You are nothing more than chattel. You will do what you're told, and if you are a lesbian, they will kill you on the spot. And anti-Semitism not only reared its head in this event since October 7th, but we've seen just how much of it has been brewing just under the surface. Netanyahu.
I have to tell you that you talk about anti-Semitism. I think that it's the oldest hatred. You know, it's an old disease, and it morphs. It takes on new forms every time. And what the anti-Semites don't realize is the attacks start with the Jews, on the Jews, but they never end there. That's what happened in the Holocaust. People said, oh, well, you know, the attacks of the Nazis on the Jews before World War II, or even the beginning, that's okay. No, it wasn't, because it afflicted all of humanity, all of civilization. And that's what you have here, too. The reason they're attacking Israel is this axis of terror understands that we're the forward position of the West and of civilization. And we're just a stumbling block on the way to you. So these people who are demonstrating in the United States and the West, I don't think they represent the majority of the American people. I know they don't. But there's a minority there that is completely misguided, and even worse than that. And I think that they don't give Israel the right that they would afford to any of their countries.
No, does not. They do not consider they have a right to defend themselves. Let me give you another example of anti-Semitism coming to the surface. It's always apparently been there. A United Airlines pilot could have been piloting a plane you've been on at some point, has now expressed support for Hamas, saying babies burned alive, women raped, that was resistance by brave people, calling Hamas terrorists brave people. He has been removed from the flight schedule, thank God. The other issue coming up is that we're not sure that anybody in the world is taking Biden seriously.
Well, President Joe Biden is talking tough on Iran, but nobody seems to be listening. Iran-backed proxies have now launched 64 attacks, that's a new number, on American bases and troops in the Middle East, with Pentagon officials now telling the Washington Post that Biden's threats of deterrence clearly are not working.
It's clear that they're not working. We've had four military responses here, but if you think about the power we have in the region, we've got two aircraft carrier strike groups right there in the Eastern Mediterranean. Our military deterrence capability is strong. The problem is that our diplomatic messages are completely undercutting it. We're appeasing Iran. Just last week, the Biden administration released another $10 billion to Iran. They're the greatest state sponsor of terror. You think about it, when they came into office, the Biden administration removed the Houthis from the foreign terrorist organization list. The Houthis turned right around and attacked Saudi Arabia. Now they're launching missiles from Yemen into Israel.
Yeah, they're a poor country, but they have missiles to attack U.S. forces. That was Tennessee Senator Bill Hagerty, Republican. And in this country, the Second Amendment is again under attack, as it always is constantly. And Senator Congressman Thomas Massie dropped an example on FBI Director Ray's lap during congressional testimony.
George Hill, former FBI supervisory intelligence analyst in the Boston field office, told us that the Bank of America, with no legal process, was gave to the FBI gun purchase records with no geographical boundaries for anybody that was a Bank of America customer. Is that true?
Well, what I do know is that the a number of business community partners all the time, including financial institutions, share information with us about possible criminal activity. And my understanding is that that's fully lawful. In the specific instance that you're asking about, my understanding is that that information was shared with field offices for information only, but then recalled to avoid even the appearance of any kind of overreach. But my understanding is that that's a fully lawful process.
No, they recalled it because, oh my God, if we're caught doing this, they'll hang us, basically. So they were gathering information on gun owners through Bank of America and other banking institutions. Again, when FBI Director Ray is sitting in that chair, if he thought that was going to satisfy Kentucky Congressman Massie, oh no, you're not near done yet.
Was there a warrant involved?
Again, my understanding is that the institution in question shared information with us, as happens all the time.
Did you request the information?
I can't speak to the specifics.
Okay, well, we've got an email where it says the FBI did give the search queries to Bank of America, and Bank of America responded to the FBI and gave over this information without a search warrant. Do you believe there's any limitation on your ability to obtain gun purchase data or purchase information from people that for people who aren't suspects from banks without a warrant?
Well, now you're asking a legal question, which I would prefer to defer to the lawyers, since I'm not practicing as one right now, including the department. But what I will tell you is that my understanding is that the process by which we receive information from business community partners across a wide variety of industries, including financial institutions, sharing information with us about possible criminal activity is something that is fully lawful under current federal law.
It may be lawful, but it's not constitutional.
Not constitutional because there's no criminal activity to buying a gun. That's your Second Amendment right and buying ammunition. Now, riddle me this. There is a statute to flag any account that has suspicious money coming into it. Those banks are required by federal law to report that to the FBI. They don't have to ask for it. It's already required, such as money involving bank accounts like, oh, I don't know, the Bidens. Remember how many times I got red flagged because of money transfers that looked suspicious? No warrant needed, no request of it. The law says do it. All right, coming up in the next few days, Iceland could be devastated by a volcano. Lock and load. Ready. On the right.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
I want to share something special with you. I've told you how Wellington Environmental works to keep hospitals, schools, businesses safe for their patients, students, clients, employees. Wellington can do the same for you. Perfect example. A relative went to the basement, almost knocked over by the smell. A sewer line had broken. A call to Wellington, a crew was dispatched. First thing, make the home safe. Then clean up the mess. Truly clean it up. Now, I'm telling you this because I want the best for you. Wellington Environmental. Here's the number, 314-644-4930. 644-4930. AAA rating with the Better Business Bureau. 644-4930. Wellington Environmental. your world cleaner, better, safer. Be well with Wellington.
Talk radio made in St. Louis.
Very excited for what you guys are doing for the St. Louis community.
For St. Louis.
Relevant local talk.
Saying what we are thinking.
This is News Talk STL.
You guys are awesome. I love you. And it really, it's a tremendous honor to be on the station.
News, analysis, and opinion.
Thanks for covering the local angle.
Come on, people. This is America.
We better open our eyes.
Really local, really good.
News Talk STL at 1019 941
and newstalkstl.com.
As a truck driver, I've learned how important road safety is. I know that large trucks need more time and room to stop. That's why I always hang back and follow other vehicles at a safe distance. Everyone can help keep our roads safe. Next time you're driving, try to remember to always give trucks extra space when you merge in front of them. Let's all plan to share the road safely. Learn how at www.sharetheroadsafely.gov.
This is Christina Strait with Strait Realty reminding you why pay more than four. In 2003, we had a dream to start a real estate company that would revolutionize the real estate market. Now, 20 years later, after navigating through the many markets' ups and downs, we know exactly how to help you in this challenging time. I'm Christina Strait, owner of Strait Realty. Don't give away your hard-earned equity. Give us a call today, 314-441-4444, 314-441-ALL-4s. And remember, why pay more than four?
Strait Realty is a licensed broker in the state of Missouri.
I have a great whiskey suggestion. Stolach Whiskey, created using natural limestone filtered water from the Ozark Highlands, aged in Missouri oak. Next time, get a bottle. But if you're going to share with friends, you better get at least two bottles. Stolach has the Larry Connors seal of approval. See the full story at Stolach.com. Stolach, Stolloch, from Stone Ledge Distillery.
To the room, passing out $100 bills, and it kills and it thrills like the horns on my Silverado grill. And I buy the bar a double round of Crown, and everybody's getting down in this town. Ain't never gonna be the same. 'Cause I saddle up my horse and I ride into the city. I make a lot of noise 'cause the girls, they are so pretty. Riding up and down Broadway.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
You might have heard throughout history that Iceland is really beautiful, and Greenland is more of a chunk of ice, and it got named that way to try to dissuade future visitors or those who might want to exploit the lands. There's some truth to the story, but the real fact is, and I don't know how many of you have been in Iceland, there was a time, and it still happens often as a refueling point, especially for military flights at Reykjavik. If you're doing transcontinental, that there would be fuel stops. But there's a bigger issue now. There are words that they're expecting a volcanic eruption at any moment. Underground tunnels in Iceland filled with magma, and it could happen, they say, within maybe days. I've got an expert to go over it in more details with us, and in fact, I'm glad to welcome him aboard for the first time, Gregory Wrightstone. Glad to have you with us, sir. We don't have him. He's not on there. Oh, we didn't get him called up yet? Okay. We'll get him lined up here in a moment. So Gregory is a geologist and the executive director of a CO2 coalition in Arlington, Virginia. Here's something else you're really going to like about Gregory before we get him. He is the author of the book Inconvenient Facts, The Science That Al Gore Does Not Want You to Know. For that reason alone, you're going to like a lot of what he thinks about climate change and everything else. His book, again, Inconvenient Facts, The Science That Al Gore Does Not Want You to Know. So I would highly recommend that you do that. But now back to the issue that they've had something like 530 earthquakes rumble through Iceland just yesterday before 7 a.m. And joining us, Gregory Wrightstone. You've been studying all this. Glad to have you on board, sir.
In fact, in my new book, that's actually going to be published here in about 2.5 weeks, hopefully, I there's a whole section I devote to human history and climate history, and the volcanoes for Iceland actually play a huge part in this, because three times in Earth's history, huge volcanoes have erupted in Iceland. The first was, that we know about in recorded history, was in 1104 BC, the volcano Hekla on Iceland erupted and led to worldwide huge temperature cooling and crop failure. It was part of the horrible effects of what was known as the Greek Dark Ages. And then again,
and now, was that because of the cloud cover blocking the sun?
It's the misnomer that people have. The ash and solids actually fall out quite soon.
Okay.
If you can imagine the solid particulate matter, it's the aerosols, the sulfates,
right,
things like that, that tend to reflect. They don't tend to. They do reflect sunlight.
Okay.
It reflects the sunlight, causes cooling. Again, in 1156 AD, during the Dark Ages, it also led to just horrific consequences, the same situation. And it led to crop failure, famine, pestilence, and mass depopulation. There were a lot of things that contributed to it, but the volcano Hekla, when it erupted, was really, really exaggerated these horrific events. And then again in 1783, during what was called the Little Ice Age, another cold period, the volcano Gakla, I'm not even going to try to pronounce it.
Okay.
I don't do Icelandic very well.
Right, I don't either. Don't worry about it.
And it was so bad that the Danish authorities that ruled Iceland at the time considered seriously abandoning the entire island nation. And,
all right, let me get some facts on where we are now. Now, my understanding is they have declared a state of emergency near this one volcano. This is more on the peninsula. Is that correct? That only about 4,000 residents nearby evacuated. But is it correct they've had more than 20,000 earthquakes hit Iceland's southwest since late October?
Yeah, I can't attest to that. I've read the same thing. There have been a lot of earthquakes, and those are usually precursors to an eruption. Who knows? The thing with volcanoes, if you've got an active volcano and there are a lot of earthquakes, I get the heck out of Dodge. I wouldn't stick around. But as for being able to predict when it's going to erupt, that's less likely. But it's certainly looking big. Now, bear in mind these really, really big ones. Again, they only occur. We've only had three of the big ones the last 3,000 years. But it doesn't have to be big to be bad, especially if you're close to it.
Sure. So if the headline reads Iceland residents expect volcanic eruption at any minute, is that exaggerated or real, but a little cautious?
No, I don't think it's exaggeration at all. I mean, these are, we're exposed, aren't we, to all these faux calamities and faux fake crises of climate. You know, we're all going to die because it's too hot, too cold, too much water, not enough water. This is a real potential crisis, yes. And it's especially for the people right there. It's not exaggerated. You have to take these things seriously.
Well, I heard you say that you have not independently confirmed that there have been 20,000 earthquakes since late October in southwestern part of Iceland, and also there's another one saying 530 quakes across southern Iceland by 7 a.m. Monday. So obviously magma is moving, and apparently there's a lot of tunnels and underground activity underway. So all this has got to go somewhere at some point.
Yeah, I mean, it's 500, 2,000, 5,000. Does it really matter?
No.
All we need to know is that there's been an uptick in activity, which is, again, like I said before, it's a precursor to an eruption. Thankfully, in the United States here, we have most of the country is very, very secure with no potential eruptions, except in the Pacific Northwest. We've got, a big potential eruption in Yellowstone that happened many, many thousands of years ago. Will probably happen again.
How would you compare what they're looking at in Iceland right now to Mount St. Helens, which would be the most recent we know in the States?
We don't know how big this one, the big ones that occurred before, the two at Hecla and the other one in 1783 were, Mount St. Helens was just a piker compared to those big ones.
Right.
They were huge, huge. We get these big ones maybe once every, not the really, really big ones, but things like El Chichon in Mexico, these things occur maybe 100 every 100, 150 or 200 years. And these have global impacts. Mount St. Helens was spectacular for sure, but it's not, I'm not going to say unusual.
Not devastating for the world, yeah.
Correct.
You're listening to Gregory Wrightstrong, geologist, executive director of the CO2 Coalition in Arlington. Now, the other thing is, we often think it when we say a volcanic eruption, we're thinking of a mass that looks like a mountain, like a volcano, and it blows out of the top, but it could be fracturing all around it without ever blowing too, correct?
Yeah, and there are two kinds of, a lot of people don't understand, there are two kinds of earthquakes. They're called explosive volcanoes, like Pinatubo, or Krakatoa. These are giants. But they're also called effusive lava flows. And that's where it just basically liquid basalt flows out and covers large portions of the region that it's doing. And these, there are a lot of misconceptions around about volcanoes. And there's one report that claims that whenever Pinatubo erupted, it produced more CO2 in that one eruption than all of man's emissions throughout all of man's history. That's completely false. In my new book, very convenient warming, I took a look at, actually, we know pretty good how much CO2 was emitted during that eruption. And we also know very accurately how much CO2 man emitted during that year. And it turned out that Pinatubo only accounted for 0.2% of all the additional CO. So
that's a very convenient truth, right?
Exactly. I mean, it sounds good, and people look at that and they go, see.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we need, as scientists, we have to point out what the truth is.
But they always will say, follow the science, and scientists are saying this is all going on. Al Gore built his whole career and his money platform on that. And then you come along and say, not really so. So we got scientists battling scientists, and everybody's confused.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of really bad things being passed off as scientific facts.
I believe that.
You know, and if you look at it, just item after item, it can be disproved easily. We're not experiencing deforestation. The Earth is actually experiencing reforestation. Deserts aren't growing; they're shrinking. It's crazy, and they're passing all these off as lies because they go unchallenged.
Well, we'll be looking for that new book. It's coming out soon, you say?
Yeah, well, it's available for pre-publication orders right now. If you go to convenientwarming.com, the title is A Very Convenient Warming: How Modest Warming and More CO2 Are Benefiting Humanity. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
The climate change we're seeing is actually...
Oh, my God, I've got a madman on the air with me.
No, a scientist.
What you say. Hey, Gregory,
yeah.
I appreciate it. We're going to, when that book comes out, we'll get you back on the air for that one.
All right.
And we may reach out again once we see what happens with Iceland over the next few days, sir.
All right, very good.
Thank you. Gregory Wrightstone, geologist, executive director of the CO2 Coalition in Arlington, Virginia. I'm glad he pointed that out. So we got a lot of bad science out there. I get folks all the time say, don't you care about the planet? Of course I care about the planet and my children and grandchildren and so forth. But these guys are running around, some of them, the sky's falling every day. Obviously it's not. So we'll get him back on in the future. Now, coming up, I want to go back into an issue involving you and your safety. Stand by, please.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at LarryConnorsUSA.
I'm always glad to have new sponsors, but I have turned some down. See, I only endorse clients if I believe in them. And I've been a spokesman for John Beal for 10 years. Through those years, listeners said they went with John Beal because, They trusted me. And just recently, a woman named Mary wrote, "We got a John Beal roof based on your recommendation." Thank you, Mary, and all the others for calling John Beal, 1-800-NEW-ROOF, 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
No matter how large or small your digging project may be, no matter how urban or rural, you must always call 811 before any digging project. 811 is our national one-call number, alerting your local utility companies to come out and mark any lines they have near your dig site. So before you do this or this, make sure you do this. For digging projects big or small, make the call to 811, brought to you by Common Ground Alliance.
Ackerman Toyota has the 2024 models. You're going to be impressed. Check them out in person at Ackerman Toyota, Hampton and Interstate 44. In fact, you've got to see the 2024 Toyota Sequoia. Very impressive. This is the time to buy and get top dollar for your vehicle. Looking for pre-owned? Ackerman Toyota can also help you. Ackerman Toyota at Hampton and 44. AckermanToyota.com. Ackerman Toyota for life.
The United States Deputy Sheriff's Association is a national nonprofit and the largest non-governmental provider of services to law enforcement. The USDSA assists city, county, state, and federal agencies with free safety equipment donations and officer survival training, along with cash donations to families of law enforcement officers who perished in the line of duty, a citizen awareness program, and more. For more information on United States Deputy Sheriff's Association, please visit usdeputy.org.
Lit Cigar Lounge in Chesterfield is so luxurious you might think you have to be a member. You don't, but you will quickly see why Lit won the 2023 Riverfront Times Best Smoking Lounge, Best Smoke Shop for the second time in a row. Quality cigars, premium drinks. So join me at Lit, just off 40 in the district at Chesterfield. For special events, entertainment, always check the website, litstl.com. litstl.com.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
I'll have to admit, closing out that segment, I was not too sure where I was going because I could see a story breaking and I hadn't seen enough of it to even tease it. But I'll tell you what it says right now, the headline. This is from Epic News. It's going to be everywhere by the time I'm telling you here. JFK assassination doctors break silence, dispute key government claim. May I state that again? JFK assassination doctors break silence, dispute key government claim. Now, by assassination doctors, they're talking about the ones that were working on the president when he came in that day. This, again, for the Epic News. It is a well-known, well-established publication, and it's factual in content. And, of course, many of us remember where we were on that day in 1963. I mean, how could you possibly forget? I remember distinctly I was in school and they basically came over the speaker and said the president's, I can't remember, I started to correct myself and say they said the president had been assassinated or just said that we're letting class out, there's been a tragedy or something. I don't even remember they said the president. The more I think about it, I think they did. But we quickly knew what it was, and of course we're talking about November 22nd, 1963. And here we are, November 21. Tomorrow would be the JFK assassination. So let me read this story from you as released by Epic Times. And the author of the article always try to give you all the details I can on it so you can look it up and read it yourself. It's written by Jack Phillips, I believe. Let me verify that. Yes, Jack Phillips, one of their authors. He said, several doctors who were in the emergency room when former President John F. Kennedy was assassinated in 1963, raised serious doubts about the official narrative that says a lone gunman was responsible, according to a new documentary featuring interviews conducted in 2013. The Federal Warren Commission established two shots fired by the lone gunman, Lee Harvey Oswald, located in the sixth floor of the Texas School Book Depository, struck President Kennedy from behind as he was traveling in the motorcade in Dallas. One of the bullets entered his upper back, exited near his larynx. The second bullet entered the right side of his head, exited via the forehead. The former president was breathing when he entered Parkland Hospital before he was pronounced dead about half an hour later. However, what seven doctors said in a recent footage disputes the commission's claims about the event. Now, what I just told you is all established as fact as to what had been told. But Jacqueline Lewith, who the executive producer of JFK, What the Doctors Saw, interviewed these seven doctors for her documentary. She wrote, the doctors, quote, recollections were precise and clear as if the intervening decades had melted away. Each of them reacted strongly when the autopsy pictures were projected on a screen. They didn't agree on everything, but it became obvious the way the president looked at Parkland. Are you listening? Are you listening? It became obvious that the way the president looked at Parkland did not match the autopsy photos taken at Bethesda even before the official autopsy began. And she added, these doctors had no agenda other than trying to save the president's life, but stipulated that those who witnessed the wound to the president's neck believed it was an entrance wound, which would dispute the Warren Commission's findings. Sarah Witham saw a gaping hole in the back of JFK's head. Another doctor who was a, I'm sorry, it skipped a page. Let me go back to this. One of the main clips from the documentary, several doctors recalled what was said by Dr. Malcolm Perry, the surgeon who attended to Kennedy, also attended Oswald. In the press conference, Dr. Perry, describing the throat wound here, said he thought it looked like an entrance wound, according to Dr. McClellan in the same video for the documentary being released. So we were thinking there were two wounds, had to be an entrance wound and an exit wound. That was the only way we could put it together, and so I thought it was an entrance wound. If you remember the video that later got released of the motorcade, the first action, well, I won't say the first action, it depends on how you're looking at, but you see the president immediately clasped toward his neck. The head moves, but was it a forceful move by a bullet, or just was he grabbing his neck and then the move? So the documentary, according to Dr. McClellan in this video, states, so we were thinking there were two wounds, had to be an entrance wound and an exit wound. That's the only way we could put it together, so I thought the one in the neck was an entrance wound. And he said later he recalled something unusual after the press conference with Dr. Perry about the assassination. He says when Dr. Perry left the room, someone came up to him who Dr. Perry thought maybe was a Secret Service man. And he told Dr. Perry, quote, I'm sure you're listening again. Quote, you must never, ever say that was an entrance wound again if you know what's good for you. That's the quote Epic Times is lifting from this documentary to be released. Dr. McClellan died of age 89 in 2019. He believed that in all probability there was a conspiracy, more than one shooter. Again, that's according to footage of a documentary released by the Daily Mail. Dr. Jones had said, in retrospect, if Mr. Oswald was in the sixth floor depository, how could he have been shot from the front then? So was there more than one assailant? Remember, it was passing slowly by that part of the depository when the shot was fired. He's saying, if he's in the sixth floor, how could it have been shot from the front, as it were? Another doctor, who was a medical student at the time, how could a gunshot from the rear peel the scalp from the front back? All of this comes as a former U.S. Secret Service agent went public for the first time in 60 years, appearing to refute the magic bullet theory. Paul Landis, an 88-year-old former agent, only feet away from Kennedy when he was shot and killed. This is an interview published in the New York Times. You might have seen this on September 9th. he recalled hearing multiple gunshots at Dealey Plaza. As he went behind Kennedy's limousine, seeing the president moving forward after being shot in the head. And he recalled picking up what he called a near perfect condition bullet from the back seat of President Kennedy's limousine near where the president had been sitting. The former agent then transferred that bullet to the hospital where Kennedy had been taken. He said he believed someone might pocket the bullet, which he did not describe in detail, as a keepsake. He also said the reason investigators suspected a magic bullet struck the president is because the bullet that Mr. Landis, the agent who had found it was later found on a stretcher belonging to President Kennedy, or at least one he had been on. But it wasn't until the New York Times interview, Landis confirmed that he was the one who placed it on the stretcher. And he realized, he said, in 2014, the location of the bullet's recovery cited to him was different than what was told in the Warren Commission. He checked with several U.S. officials, all met with skepticism. That same year, a former Secret Service colleague, identified as Clint Hill, also warned this former Secret Service agent, Landis, sure I got his name right, Paul Landis, warned Paul Landis he should not speak out about what he saw on that day. If he did, there might be many, quote, ramifications. Now, I know the conspiracy theory about JFK and another gunman and so forth comes up from time to time, and certainly as we move into this next anniversary of that tragedy, it's going to happen again. This piece, again, published in Epoch Times, written by Jack Phillips. I'm not telling you to take it for fact as I read it, but there's enough detail being presented by folks who apparently were there. Would their memory be clouded? Would they have an agenda? I mean, the very fact that the one doctor apparently was told by a Secret Service agent or someone who appeared to be a Secret Service agent, you must never, ever say there was an entrance wound again if you know what's good for you. That statement on its face value raises a lot of questions. I mean, obviously there has to be an entrance wound. I don't care if you want to say it came to the neck or the back, but generally, when a body is hit by a bullet, especially the head, you're going to have an entrance wound, and where it exits, it blows a bigger part of the body open. I've never heard this was an armor piercing shell. I've never heard it was anything more than not the rounds we often carry in our pistols nowadays that are primed to, you know, cause as much damage as possible when they go through even the chest. General 22 round, just a single 22 round, this not describing that's what this was in this case, but it will pierce, but it doesn't blow organs apart as it goes through. It just pierces each of them, almost like a thin needle going all the way through the body or whatever it might be. A bullet with its force is going to have an entrance point, and where it exits, there's going to be a larger gaping hole. Basic science to that extent. Well, it raises more questions, obviously, doesn't it? Now, as I said that day when we were released from school and quickly found out what was going on, I was already working part-time at a radio station, so I went going over the station to see what I could do to help and helping. Then we had the teletyper going like crazy, and I was pulling off copy and running it to the guys who were actually on the air. I wasn't on the air, just serving behind the scenes, but I just thought I want to be involved in this in some way. But you remember where you were. November 22nd, 1963. January 6th of 2021 still being tossed into conservatives like grenades. In fact, some of you might be a target of a campaign that is now following Americans.
Our primary mission is a little group called Quiet Skies. It's a mission called Quiet Skies that we're following people that flew into the National Capital Region in January 2021. You did not have to go to the Capitol or the rally, and you've been put on a specific list that TSA now has assigned air marshals to follow these people who have not had any type of criminal investigation. They haven't committed a crime, but yet 3 years later, we're following the same individuals day in and day out.
So you're saying that air marshals are now following people that were at the Capitol on January 6th, and they're not tracking terrorists at all?
Well, they didn't even have to be at the Capitol, Carly. They could have just flown into the National Capital Region. So if anybody was there for a job interview, to visit family, we even had a gentleman that was there for a funeral. They put on this domestic terrorist list just because of their geographic location to Washington, D.C. So these people did not even commit a crime. They weren't even at the Capitol.
Did not even commit a crime. We're not even at the Capitol. Now, the speaker you were listening to is being interviewed on Fox News is Sonia Labasco. She is head of the Air Marshal National Council. She's the director of it, I should point out. And she says, we're not doing our job. We're not on planes right now. We've all of our people have been taken off. Our air marshals have now been sent down to the border, and they're doing nothing but passing out water. That's it. That's what they're doing, just passing out water. Well, to that extent, they're also still chasing down folks who were there in D.C. on January 6th. Now, let me let you know something. If you were there on January 6th, just because you flew in for anything, as she points out later, if you were maybe there for a job interview or somewhere not even near the Capitol, they got a record that you flew in that day, and they're still tracking people. And some people are finding out they're being tracked only when they go to purchase an airline ticket for something else. They're being pulled aside and questioned. Why? Earlier in the first hour, again, if you missed it, shame on you, but I know you can't listen all the time. Go to LarryConnorsUSA.com, LarryConnorsUSA.com, and pull it up, talking about how they still have not or will not tell us who put the pipe bombs at the DNC and RNC. And there is evidence suggesting that a federal agent was involved in placing it because he's talking to police and talking to a Secret Service agent in a car and then walks off to place the bag somewhere. They won't give you a full answer. But they will continue to use January 6th to destroy any conservative. And they've locked a lot of people up simply because they were walking through the hallway. I told you the other day, one of them pictured in the hallway, found out he was going to be treated as a terrorist, ended up hanging himself. He'd done nothing. For those of the St. Louis area, many will know the name Colonel Leonard Griggs. He served as a leader of the St. Louis airport for many years. He passed away last night. He, by the way, was the youngest B-47 aircraft commander in the history of the Air Command. Entered West Point at the age of 18 in 1950. At Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, had the opportunity to fly with the flight division, including space program Gus Grissom and Al White. Colonel Leonard Griggs, always enjoyed talking to the man. He was always honest. Said, I would not mind serving under you, but I would never want to work for you. And we got to have a laugh over that. God be with you and your family. Remember our prayer, one nation under God.